You can be turning with me in your copy of the Scriptures to Paul's letter to the church at Rome and the first chapter, Romans chapter 1. I was born in a port city of Colombia, South America called Barranquilla. But I remember one of a special treat for us, because we did not minister in the big city down there. We were in desert towns and mountain towns, and it really was a very special treat to go to the big port city of Barranquilla. And we would often, as a family, just walk in the city streets at night with all the lights and the different things to see and look out over the Caribbean. There were certain neighborhoods, however, that we chose to stay away from, because they were less than desirable. They were a little too dark. They just didn't look like a place you would want to take a family into. It wasn't pretty. But you think about it, the Lord was attracted to those kinds of neighborhoods, wasn't He? As we get into this portion of Paul's letter to the church at Rome, it's not pretty. Paul has introduced to us the power of God, which has been revealed for salvation. But the very fact that salvation is needed implies that there is something that's not very pretty about the condition of humanity. That's what we get into now in the book of Romans. And in Romans chapter 1, verses 18 through the end of the chapter to verse 32, you can see the outline of that study is on the back of your grace binds. That's the outline that we're going to be following. Hopefully that can give you kind of like a framework to follow so that you'll know where we're going, because it's not going to be strictly just verses as they appear in order of this portion of Paul's letter to the church at Rome. But what he is speaking of is the current condition of humanity, and the condition that has been of humanity for many millennia, from almost the beginning of time, from the fall of Adam and Eve. And this will be the condition of humanity until time is no more. We need rescue. So what Paul is getting into here, and actually this whole section of Scripture is from 1:18 all the way through chapter 3, verse 20. This is the condition of humanity. This is why man needs rescue. This is why man needs salvation. This is what makes the good news good. The good news is that God has offered salvation. He has made available to us a condition acceptable to Him through His Son, Jesus Christ. Chapter 1, 18 through chapter 3, verse 20, Paul explains why we need Jesus Christ. This is what makes the good news good. In other words, this is the bad news. This is the not so pretty part of this letter. This, unfortunately, is the element of Scripture that many churches are avoiding today. You take, for example, a huge church down in Texas that doesn't even talk about sin. Listen, the gospel is not the gospel if we do not first understand our sinful condition. And this is what Paul is talking about here. So let's not just think about them or other people. Let's remember that we are created beings. We were born under the curse. We have born in a fallen state. We have needed the salvation of Jesus Christ. That is our condition. The first place that we are going to go here, because Paul is talking about the gospel of Jesus Christ, the power of God to salvation, we are going to consider the epistemological common ground of all of humanity. Now, some of you might be thinking, what on earth is that? Let me fill in those first blanks for you, okay? And this is what Paul is sharing with us here. There is a knowledge, there is a common knowledge that all humanity has. What everyone can know and ought to know. That is the epistemological common ground of humanity. What everyone can know and ought to know. It's as plain as the nose on our faces. Epistemology is the word that means the nature of knowledge. The nature of knowledge, its foundations, scope, and validity. Upon what is knowledge built? What is the reach of knowledge, and how do we know what knowledge is true and what is not? Paul helps us out tremendously with that right here. We're going to, for now, we're going to skip over verse 18 in terms of exposition, and we're going to be coming back to it. So refer to the outline on the back of your grace finds if you're interested to know where that's going to come in. In fact, we're going to be visiting that several times. But let me read beginning at verse 16, and then I will read through verse 20. For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God to salvation for everyone who believes, for the Jew first and also for the Greek. For in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, the just shall live by faith. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. Because what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Verse 18 begins with bad news, doesn't it? The wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. What truth is it that they are suppressing? That's where I want to begin. Because what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. Who is them? Humanity, apart from special revelation. In other words, them is anyone who doesn't have a Bible. Because the scriptures are the special revelation of God. And in it, we know and understand the love and the grace and the redemption of God. And the reconciliation that he draws us to himself. Apart from the Bible, everyone can and ought to know certain things about God. That is epistemological common ground. All humanity, saved, unsaved, regenerate, unregenerate. We all have this common ground of knowledge and truth. This is what Paul is bringing out. We need to consider the direction of human history because there is a conventional thought today that is exactly opposite. And that is that man began as beast and proceeded to modern man who worships his idea of God. In other words, God is nothing more than a construct of the human, of the developed and enlightened human mind. That's exactly backwards. History shows us that man began knowing God and turned from his Creator. And that's what we know. When he speaks of perception and understanding, verse 19, for what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. That's perception, that is understanding, that's dealing with intelligence, that's dealing with physical sight. To manifest and to show, it just simply means it has been rendered apparent. It is clear, it is visible, it is comprehensible, it is understandable. In other words, it is plain to them. The truth of God is plain to mankind, and they can behold fully the idea of an infinite personal creator. In verse 20, "For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made." It's the word noeo. It means to comprehend by exercise of the mind. It is amazing what we can comprehend when we actually engage in thought. Did you know thinking is hard work? I have a snide remark that follows that, which says that's why so few people engage in it. But, you know, thinking is hard work. You ever had somebody say to you, "Think about it for a minute"? Or when you're saying something, it says somebody says, "Wait, wait, stop. Think about what you're saying." Guess who's good at saying that? Dwight Ball. Says it all the time. It's a good statement to make. Wait, wait, wait. Think about what you're saying. Because there are so many positions and ideas and ideologies held today that are logically inconsistent. And if we exercise our minds and think through them, what Paul is telling us in Romans chapter 1, that if we simply look around us and we understand ourselves and we look around us, we look at all that is, if we think through that, we will come up with one conclusion. There is an infinite personal creator. Interesting what it says in verse 20. His invisible attributes. Now, attributes, probably in your text, is in italics, which means it's not a word that is in the original. It just simply means the invisible things of God. Now, what does it say after that? The invisible things of God are what? Clearly seen. That's an interesting juxtaposition, isn't it? Invisible things clearly seen. How can that happen? Clearly seen. That is a present passive indicative. In other words, it's staring at you right in the face. The invisible things of God are staring at you right in the face. Just open your eyes. In essence, is what Paul is saying. This is the capacity to comprehend invisible things based on visible evidence. In other words, when it comes to biblical faith, though many today would contend that faith is irrational, it is unreasonable, faith and truth don't mix, you really can't have the two together. By the way, if you listen to the entertainment world today, listen with that critical ear. You will find that message replete through the movies and the sitcoms that you watch. That faith and truth are irreconcilable. You can't have both at the same time. They're irrelevant to each other. But what we find in biblical Christianity is that there is, in fact, a logical consistency and there is an empirical adequacy. The invisible things of God are what? Clearly seen. On contemplating God's work, man can grasp enough of God's nature to prevent him from the error of identifying any of the created things with the Creator. Let me say that again. On contemplating God's work. Now, contemplating, what is that? That is exercise of the mind. On contemplating God's works, man can grasp enough of God's nature to prevent him from the error of identifying any of the created things with the Creator. All these things out here I can look at as created. Every one of you is a created being. And by contemplating on these things, I can arrive at the conclusion. I can, and it can prevent me from the error of looking out and looking at any created thing and saying, that is the Creator. No, because everything that I see here is a created thing. What are the invisible things of God that are clearly seen? What does it say in verse 20? First of all, His eternal power. The eternal power of God. If I contemplate, when I look around, I consider the things that are made, myself included, I can understand that there is cause and effect. That there is, in fact, a design. When it says being understood by the things that are made, that word made is a word that means workmanship. It is something that has been crafted with skill and complexity, and that's what you and I are. And all of the nature and the universe around us has been crafted with skill and precision and great complexity. This is from the introduction in Ben Weicker's book, Moral Darwinism. Ancient apologists had only their naked eyes and their reason and argued for design on the basis of the obvious indications of intricate complexity and amazing order visible before them. From the regular motions of the heavenly bodies to the integral beauty and purposeful organization of living things. But the contemporary science is gathering evidence from sources far below and beyond the reach of the naked eye. The advances of modern technology have enabled us to discover ever more layers of wonderful, intricate order. From the astounding complexity of DNA and the amazing, beautifully orchestrated inner workings of cells to the discovery of the anthropic nature of the universe created in harmonious concordance of its finest details for human life. The deeper science digs, the more the evidence points to an intelligent cause. So true. Bill Davies, a physicist at Arizona State University, said, and I can tell from looking at all of his literature and things that he's writing, he is struggling with the idea of God. The idea of God is replete through all of his writings, his books, his essays. He says this, the impression of design is overwhelming. Kenneth Wiest says, man reasoning upon the basis of the law of cause and effect, which law requires an adequate cause for every effect, is forced to the conclusion that such a tremendous effect as the universe demand a being of eternal power and of divine attributes. That being must be the deity who should be worshipped. But it requires an open and honest exercise of the mind without allowing our eyes to be distracted by worthless things. His eternal power is not only the principle of cause and effect, understanding the principle of cause and effect, but that God has, the Creator would have an enduring miraculous power. In other words, the power to create. Look around you. Some intelligence had the power to create all that is. It would also lead the thinking in the rational person to understand that there is an accountability. If this one has the power to create, he also has the power to what? Destroy. It says, The invisible things of God are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even His eternal power and His Godhead. This is the word, it means divinity. That it is infinite eternal power. And the divinity of God, if one exercises the mind by observing the things that are made and understanding ourselves as persons, as rational, volitional, emotive, relational beings, then we would understand that the Creator is an intelligence. He has provided information, all the information. It talks about looking at DNA. What is that? It's information. Where did that information come from? It can't come from nothing. It had to come from an intelligent source. Not only is His divinity about intelligence, it is about personhood. Personhood. That this person is a communicator. And there is order and there is design. But not only is that, but there is the possibility, the capacity, since I am a person, since I am a communicator, the one who created me must also be a person, a communicator, one who desires fellowship. It's our design. Not only intelligence and personhood, but one who has wisdom to plan. And then when we consider how we are as persons, that we would be created in the image of the one who is the Creator, that leads us to conscience and morality. And we see that embedded in the statement. It says, what may be known of God is manifest. Where? In them. What may be known of God is manifest in you and me. I am an image bearer of the one who created me. The things that are clearly seen, these are the visible things. The invisible things of God are clearly seen by the things that are made. What are the visible things? Well, it's creation. What God has made. Because God is spirit, He is therefore invisible. But He is an infinite, He is an eternal spirit. He is creator. And He has created all that is. Now, when it comes to the question of existence, there are only three possible answers. Where did everything come from? There are only three possible answers to that question. That there is a source. What is the source of what everything? Because understanding the law of cause and effect. The first possible answer would be nothing. It's what Francis Schaeffer calls nothing, nothing. Ravi Zacharias says, what is nothing? He says, it's what rocks think about. Something can't come from nothing. This is one of the possible answers of the question of existence. And to say that everything came from nothing would be to say that everything is self-created. Kind of like these shoes. You recognize those shoes? They appeared, poof, and have been on the coat rack now for a month. Nobody knows where they came from. They just appeared. And they've just been there. But you look at these, you think, well, where did they come from? They came from nowhere. But you look at them and there's design, there are particular patterns, it is sewn together, there are several different pieces, there are different, several, at least three or four different materials in this, and it's all intricately woven together. It looks like it was put together with purpose and design. Must have made itself. Ah, made in Indonesia. The one question these shoes have not ever figured out is, where are they going? But we cannot bring ourselves to believe that matter is self-created, because that would assume that there was an intelligence that existed before it created itself. Can't happen. So that is not a viable answer. The second answer to the question of creation is an impersonal source. Impersonal source. But there are still many questions that that cannot answer. It doesn't answer the question of personality. Where did my personality come from? That we as human beings can interact and communicate with each other. That the words that I say, you can process them and understand them. And we can relate to each other. How about the whole question of morality? Where did that come from? Information. Can information arise simply from an impersonal source? In terms of its origin? How about intelligence? Where does intelligence come from? Can it arise from an impersonal source? It would be very difficult to come up with a yes answer for that question. You have a conscience and you know that you have violated it. Can this come from an impersonal source? And on and on and on we could go, and that is not our purpose here this morning. But the third answer for the question of existence is that the source is personal. The source is personal. And by recognizing all that is, the vastness, the complexity of it all, we would also have to recognize, and by the virtue of the very fact that I can contemplate time going on and on and on and on and on, we can understand that numbers are infinite, and yet God knows them all. And so I can conclude from that, that the source of all that is not only personal, but he must necessarily be an infinite personal being. And not only is he infinite, but he is relational. He is one who communicates. Psalm 19, verses 1 to 3. We know these verses well. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork. There's that word. Handiwork. Craftsmanship. Intelligence. Design. Purpose. All of that. Day unto day utters speech, and night unto night reveals knowledge. Epistemology. Knowledge is revealed to us. There is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. What's that saying? The knowledge of God is what? Universal. It is our epistemological common ground of all people on the earth. We can and ought to know that there is an infinite personal creator who communicates. These are things we can and ought to know. Creation reveals knowledge to a rational person. Isaac Newton. This most beautiful system of the sun, planets, and comets could only proceed from the counsel and dominion of an intelligent, powerful being. Isaac Newton, right there, is doing exactly what Paul is saying in Romans 1, 19 and 20. Not in the negative sense, but he is proclaiming that by observation and the exercise of his mind, he is arriving at the one appropriate conclusion that there is an infinite personal creator. But it even goes beyond that. It's not just that there was an infinite personal creator who started it all and set it all in motion. There's more to it than that. Acts chapter 14, verse 17. God, in bygone generations, allowed all nations to walk in their own ways. Nevertheless, he did not leave himself without witness in that he did good. He gave us rain from heaven in fruitful seasons, filling our hearts with food and gladness. What is this verse telling us? What were Paul and Barnabas saying to these people? Francis Schaeffer says it well. It isn't just that our world had a first cause, but that we are surrounded with the good things of God. It isn't just that our world had a first cause, but that we are surrounded with the good things of God. And so, Paul says in verse 20, His eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Natural revelation, which is what we're talking about, is you look at creation and we consider ourselves that we are persons, we have personality, we can think, we have emotion, there is morality, we can communicate, we can fellowship, there are relationships. All of that points to the source of it all. That is what we call natural revelation. Natural revelation is enough to make humanity responsible. Responsible. Accountability. It is not sufficient for salvation. But to lead the rational being to investigate the infinite personal creator. Turn with me to Acts chapter 17. This is the approach that Paul took when he was speaking to the intelligentsia at Athens on Mars Hill. Very religious people, some not so religious, but he was saying this. Look what he says beginning at verse 24. God, who made the world and everything in it, since he is Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands. Okay? In other words, he's infinite. He's boundless. He's not a created being like we are. Nor is he worshipped with men's hands as though he needed anything, since he gives to all life, breath, and all things. And he has made from one blood every nation of men to dwell on the face of the earth, and has determined their pre-appointed times and the boundaries of their dwellings. Verse 27. So that they should, what? Seek the Lord. Natural revelation is enough to hold man accountable. And it is given to rational beings to lead the rational being to investigate the infinite personal creator. Verse 27, so that they should seek the Lord in the hope that they might grope for him and find him, though he is not far from each one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being, as also some of your own poets have said, for we are also his offspring. Therefore, since we are the offspring of God, we ought not to think that the divine nature is like gold or silver or stone, something shaped by art or man's devising. In other words, we are created, and the Creator is the Creator. And we ought not worship anything that has been created or formed and fashioned. The only one worthy of our worship is the infinite personal creator himself. That is the single appropriate conclusion of irrational man. The verse was read this morning. Without faith, it is impossible to please God, for he who comes to God must believe that he what? Is, and that he is the rewarder of those who diligently seek him. Understand this. Our reconciliation to God was 100% initiated and provided by him. We do not come up with the idea of God. God has manifest himself to us. We didn't come up with it. God is not the formation of intelligent human beings. Intelligent human beings are created by an infinite personal creator. And that is a conclusion that can be clearly drawn from just looking around us and contemplating the creation and contemplating ourselves. That is the truth. That is the truth that has been suppressed. There is a universal objective knowledge of God as the Creator. That is what Paul is telling us in 1:19-20. But what he tells us in verse 18, that if there is one thing that humanity has mastered, it is suppressing truth. And this is the truth that has been suppressed.